From Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is an hour-long Election 2025 special from the Local Edition, featuring candidates running for Sullivan County Sheriff. I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me tonight. Election Day is just 1 week away, and early voting is underway in New York State. One of the most visible races in Sullivan County, New York, is the race for sheriff. And it is not a typical race, because while incumbent Sheriff Michael Schiff is on the Republican and Conservative Party lines on Sullivan County voters' ballots, his challenger, Tim Diamond, is not on any ballot. He's running a write-in campaign. Schiff defeated Diamond in this year's Republican primary back in June by a margin of more than 21%. In early September, Tim Diamond announced he was officially challenging Michael Schiff as a write-in candidate. And all of this is happening amid accusations against and even investigations of the Sullivan County Sheriff's Department, with some of those accusations made in public by Diamond when he first announced his candidacy and which he has repeated since then. So we are extending the Local Edition till 7 to make sure that you get to hear from both of these candidates tonight and so that you can get all of the info that you need from the candidates themselves. Let's get started. Here's Radio Catskill's Patricio Rubio with the incumbent.
Sullivan County Sheriff Mike Schiff has served in the position since 2006, and he's seeking another 4 years. But again, Sheriff, thank you so much for coming back onto the show. In your view, why should voters vote for you again come November, early voting or in November 4th?
Yeah, early voting has already started.
Yeah.
So the election is already underway. But thank you for having me here today. And I've been your sheriff for the last 20 years. We've tried to be innovative, brought in technology. Training. We've really tried to up the game on training. I think some of our training has come to bear. People have been able to see that. The temperament of the office. And I would hope that people like the response that they get from our deputies, that they show up, they act appropriately, and that they have the equipment to do the job when required from the public when needed. And I think one of the things we've strived for from the time we took office was the demeanor of our people. We drum in their heads from day one before we hire them and the people that work there that you're a public servant. When you show up for something, you may think that it's not a huge deal. You might think it's fairly minor. Why are you calling the police? At that moment, that's the most important thing to that person, and you should act accordingly. That when you respond, that person should know you're taking an interest in their problem and you're trying to solve it. Sometimes you won't be able to solve it. But if they know you tried and that you really cared, that you were there for them, normally that'll be enough. And of course, we do want to try to solve every problem when we respond. And through the training and equipment we have, hopefully we can. But I think that's the heart of policing in today's day and age, and has been. Not to forget, you're not just there to bully people around and tell them what to do. You're not just there for the homicides and the fatal car accidents and the things that are just very dramatic, and you just have to take charge and you have to do something with it. A lot of times it's something very simple, something very personal. And I think it's very important that our people have that demeanor, and I hope that they do. And we've had so many community outreach things, from sending our people or I go or the undergoes to reach out to the seniors. About 15, 18 years ago, we started foot patrols that if you're out in Roscoe, Manor, Jeff, Narrowsburg, Calicoon, Wordsboro, if you're not on a call, park your car, take a half an hour, 15 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever you have, get out of the car and walk. You'll encounter people. They'll ask you questions. And even if they don't ask you a question, they'll see you're there. It's a huge difference from just driving by, even at a slow rate of speed. It shows you're there, you're on the ground, and even if it's only for 10 minutes. And our people have been doing that. And I think that's been, people probably don't even notice it anymore. In the beginning, it was very noticeable, but we're still doing that. And we do outreach, coffee with the sheriff. You come, you meet me, maybe the under, a couple of our deputies, and you come somewhere. We've kind of branched that out where we've done them at firehouses, town halls, but in the beginning, it was just little coffee shops. And we have coffee. And it just sounds like a gimmick. I didn't invent it. It's not a gimmick. People come, and there has not been one of those things where someone hasn't asked me a question or one of my deputies that they had a problem of some sort, and can you come solve it, from speeders on their road running a stop sign, a barking dog in their neighborhood, somebody dealing drugs, all kinds of things. And that's what it's for. People don't come to my office. It's rare. And usually if they do, it's because they know me and they're just stopping in to say hello. People don't come to my office to complain. They may call and we'll dispatch somebody, but to have a face with the person you're talking to sit down with a deputy over a cup of coffee or a drink, not an alcoholic drink, a soda or water. Back in the days, it might have been that, but not anymore. Those days are gone. And talk about your problems before they're blowing up and out of control and we're responding with a patrol car to your house. So pancake breakfast, chicken dinners at the firehouses, roast beef dinners at the firehouses, dinners at churches, functions with the Boy Scouts, all these different things that we go to, you're interacting with the public. You're hearing from them. Again, all these functions, people come up to us. It's called community policing. I don't know what other people think community policing is, that I'm out in the community and I'm policing, so it's community policing. All these things are allowing the public to have input and let you know what's going on. And I can't tell you how many times at a diner or a coffee shop, when we're not having these things, someone will see you and they'll come up to you and say, you know, I've been meaning to call you. I got this problem. They were meaning to call, but they never will. But you're there. The difference is you're there and you're going to hear from them. They're going to tell you what their problem is and can you do something about it? And to some extent, it's almost like if you say, I'm going to call the police, if you don't knock it off, there's one frame of mind there. You're going to get one result. If there's a policeman there or a police car right there, you probably don't have to say it. Or if you say it, it's going to be an immediate response. It's a huge difference.
Yeah.
And I think that goes along with that. Don't wait until it's an emergency. Get out to people. Find out what's going on around the county.
I was something I want to bring up that came up to light recently with the Times Union article about something, a situation that happened at the Sullivan County's Sheriff's Office. It happened last August that a gun went undetected of a person who came into the was detained by the Sheriff's Office, was able to hide a gun in his jacket. And it wasn't only found out until afterwards, supposedly from another incarcerated person. He was blabbing to another incarcerated person that he smuggled a gun in. And according to the article, it didn't come out to light or wasn't investigated until 2 months later. I just want to see if you want to go on the record and tell us about that situation and exactly what happened from your point of view.
Yeah, I really can't say much about that. Mm-hmm. It was not a proper search. Very serious lapse. And a gun did get into our facility and then into the jail. But it never made it on the floor. People seem to think that there was an inmate walking around with a gun on the floor of the jail. No. He came in, got processed, and inadvertently, again, another mistake, another improper search. It went right into his property bag that gets sealed and put in the property room for the inmates, which is secure and on camera. So it never made it onto the floor of the jail. As far as how we got word about that and what happened, that should have never gotten out in any manner. And I can't speak to how we got the information about how we found that handgun. But at the time, the gun was disabled. There was a round lodged in there. Clearly, they had tried to pry it out and they could not. And as far as an investigation, I've heard that we have no investigation. I don't know who better than me would know if we did or didn't. But the DA was contacted that night. We moved forward working with him and one of his investigators, and our jail secured the firearm in a brown paper bag the way they're supposed to, locked it up in the safe in jail admin. And this has been an ongoing investigation with the DA's office. And really, that's about all I can say. I'm very upset that some of the information that was leaked out that was fed to the Times Union, I just hope it doesn't have repercussions.
When was the DA contacted? Was it that night? That night when it was discovered. Okay.
Yeah. Right hot off the press. While it was happening, the DA's office was contacted.
Right. Now, the reason we brought you in here again for another interview was that Tim Diamond is your opponent, was your opponent in the primary. He lost. You are the leading candidate. He's writing a writing campaign now for the Sullivan County Sheriff. I just wanted to see, you know, if you want to state again, exactly why should voters again vote for you again over riding campaign like Tim Diamond?
Well, I would hope the public after 20 years knows who I am. And if they have confidence in me, if they like the job I'm doing, not the job that some people are saying I'm doing, you know, up until now, I think people were pretty happy until they're being told that they shouldn't be happy. And you're not happy. You just think you're happy. I would like our agency to be judged on people's experience with us. Has it been positive? What you're seeing with your own eyes, are you satisfied with your sheriff's office, the jail, the road patrol, civil, the services that we're providing and the way it operates? So I would just ask them to judge on that, not what some people are churning up and trying to get you to believe, because I'm not climbing into the mud on this. I'm not going to go for a tit for tat. I'm going to run on my record and my office's record. And I hope people will make their judgment based on that, not on what I allege or what my, I don't want to call my opponent, but what he alleges or his people that are pushing for him allege. I'd like them to base what they, their decision on what they see. And that's the democratic way. If people aren't happy with how I run the office or how they perceive it, well, then the answer should be clear. Right. But after seeing the primary, it appeared that the good majority of the people are still satisfied with how I'm running the office. And now it'll be a general election. And we'll see if the people aren't happy and they're looking for something else, fine. If you are happy and your perception before you were told you shouldn't have that perception, if you were happy, I think make your judgment on what you see, what you felt, and how you think our agency is responding, because I think our agency has advanced tremendously. I think it's a very professional organization with very dedicated men and women, and we've been very open to women. I wanted to bring that up, that more so than many other agencies. We have 100 people in our jail. We have 21 women, almost 25%. We have a sergeant and two corporals of rank. In the road patrol, we've got 60 members. We have 9 females, a lieutenant, a sergeant, and a detective. And we were very proud. We just made our first female detective. Oh, wow. So we've been an open agency. That's it's not an old boys club. Like it's, I've heard that said about our agency. We're very open. We've got a lot of different ethnicities, religions. We're a pretty open agency, and we have a lot of everything. It's a melting pot, just like our country. Right. And I think it reflects our county.
Now, you know, everybody's budgets are shrinking. Things, of course, are going up in every organization here. With new technology coming out, we talked about this once, but I want to see your take on body cams for the sheriff's office. Is that something you're looking forward to in the future? And how can it help the sheriff's office and also the transparency with the community?
There are pros and cons on anything. And I see advantages and disadvantages. I know sheriffs that have gone to the body cameras 5-6 years ago because it cuts down on the amount of complaints. Mm-hmm. They lived in very populated areas where complaints against their deputies were prevalent, happened all the time. And this protected the deputy so that if somebody made an allegation, go to the camera. And no, you're getting arrested for falsely reporting an incident. I can see the value. It also records an incident while you're reacting. There are pluses. On the other side, the costs are pretty steep. It is something we're looking at. There's two different companies that handle it. The cost difference is quite substantial. The one that gets more money, there are some advantages. We are looking at that. And I think probably in the near future, that's going to be the way that the public expects that. And we're probably going to have to figure out how to finance that. There are grants. I've heard people mm-hmm. say, we're going to do it and we'll get grants. There are grants to offset this stuff. But there's still going to be a cost to the county and an ongoing cost to the county. And the biggest cost is the storage and having people that are going to review these cameras. It's not just a small thing. And every year when we come up for budget, we have to make decisions. I've had some things I've wanted to buy for 10 years for the office, but every year there's something that comes up that trumps that. So you have to balance dollars against need. And I think it's getting to the point with the public's expectation that this is going to be one of the things that'll probably happen in the near future. But that will be done through negotiating with our legislature. They are my partners in everything we do. I may be the elected sheriff and make day-to-day decisions, but they fund it. So if I need to come up with $1 million for something or $500,000, whatever the number might be at the end of the day, because when I do something, it's not like one of the local PDs where there's 15, 20, 23 right. people. It's going to be more in the ballpark of 180, 185 people. Those numbers just go way up. And it's a chunk of change. And with everything else the county's got to go for, they're getting all kinds of things coming in. They got to spend large amounts of money on. But they've been pretty good. All the legislators I've worked with, if you can show them it makes sense, that it's necessary, they'll try to come up with the money. But that'll be the next thing, to sit down with them, kind of debate the pros and cons, the value of it, the drawbacks of it, and we'll move forward.
You mentioned storage because it's not only like you have the cameras and that's it. It's also storing the information inside it and also having somebody review it.
Yeah.
And on call and have it. And I don't know how long you get to have the footage.
The ancillary cost of storing it is the big one. Yeah. And that's why the costs are so high. But there are ongoing costs. It's not just a matter of buying cameras. We need 185 cameras or 180 cameras. We buy those and we're done. That's not it. There's a lot of ongoing costs and it's expensive. We've been lucky. We have not had a lot of complaints. And some of the things we have had that we might look at, I don't know if the cameras would have been kicked on. You have to find out what's going to trigger those cameras to go on. They don't walk around on camera all day. Some places have, when you put your emergency lights on, they kick on. Mm-hmm. Others, when you draw your weapon. Others, when you hit the camera and it'll go on. There's a button. So they're not walking around all day. So there are times where you might have the camera on. You might go through a whole thing. These things happen quick out on the road, and you don't have the footage. And all I can think about is if you have a camera on you and you say, we don't have footage of that, are you in more trouble? I don't know. But I think overall, I think the future is going to hold that cameras will be part of the future, just like they are on every other thing we do on the road, whether it's poll cams, plate readers, any of the camera systems we put in place to do our police work. It's going to be a part of the future.
You mentioned, in the past that you call some of the criticism against your office politically motivated. How do you separate politics from the performance in your role as the sheriff?
Well, I think politics comes in when you run, but I don't like generating information that's not correct or that just is sensational just by its nature. And you just take the shot, create it, sometimes the illusion of something wrong, but there's really nothing there. I'm not a fan of that. If you've got facts, if you've got things, put them out and don't throw out innuendo. There have been a lot of things in this campaign where there's been a lot of innuendo for the primary and for the election that if you're a good investigator and you've got facts, lay out facts, not what you heard. Not that somebody you heard that someone looked into this, where are the facts? If they found something, is it substantiated? For example, one of the things that keeps getting thrown in is my undersheriff buying ammo. And they're inferring that he did it to beat taxes, that he used some sort of county benefit to order this ammo. And they keep throwing it out there. It's just sensationalizing. It's just throwing it out and having you make an assumption. My undersheriff bought ammo and he had it shipped to our office. So it wasn't sitting on his porch out in the rural part of Neversink. I would rather have it shipped to my office than us looking for stolen ammo, especially in this climate. At the time that happened, there was no violation of law. There was no violation of a rule or a regulation or anything, but they make it that it's a criminal enterprise over here, that we're breaking the law, that we're corrupt, and throwing things like that out to try to foster that when there's nothing there. And if there is something there, please mention what violation had occurred, what law was broken, what rule was broken, and I'll take a look at that and we'll correct it. Now, they canvassed two other sheriff's offices in an article from the Times Union, and I'm a little concerned with that. It was a little biased. They asked, do you allow your members to buy ammo and have it shipped to the office, or do you allow them to buy it by mail? And they said no. And that was the question. Well, we don't anymore either. It's illegal to do that now. At the time, it wasn't. And a lot of police agencies, I'm well aware of, allowed it to happen so that the ammo was secure. Not to buy it under the community's purchase number to beat taxes or anything. You could buy it. You could have it shipped to wherever you wanted. But it was safe to have it shipped to your office. So they asked a question that was a disingenuous question, to bring a certain conclusion that they knew your answer was going to be no, because it's illegal now. But at the time that happened, there was no violation of anything, and it was completely legal, and nobody wants to talk about what the violation might be. They want to allude to, well, they were trying to do away with taxes. They used the county's purchase number. Nothing like that happened. And that's what concerns me with some of the people involved in this are seasoned investigators. They know better, and they could find out, and they didn't. Or if you're making an allegation, make sure you can back it up that there's something to base it on. They're not. So that's where I get concerned when things like that happen.
You're listening to Patricio Rubio speaking with Michael Schiff, running for re-election as sheriff in Sullivan County. We'll hear from the challenger coming up. This is Radio Catskill election coverage on the local edition.
What's some things you want to prioritize in this round again? Something you want to sort of build on, or any new initiatives you have?
The biggest thing, and we've identified that long ago from when we first got in, training. We're going to continue training on every level. ATAC, a video streaming system, promotes situational awareness at a scene and for tactical operations. So if you've got a camera, it can send that signal. People can look at it on their cell phone, on a laptop. If we're doing a no-knock warrant with our team, other people can watch in real time that are standing by. You could watch that back at the office. It's a tremendous asset. Plate readers. We were the first one in the county to have plate readers. The state police had them, but not in Sullivan County. And the plate readers, it's an incredible tool. Read the plate. Every time you encounter a car, it's reading that plate. And if we hear something happened or we're looking for someone that might be wanted, we can plug that in, and it can tell us if we encountered it and where and when, what time, or how many times. It stores information. And if somebody else has it in there, you pass that vehicle, it'll tell you, and you can turn around and you can go nab the suspect, or you can drive through a motel or a restaurant parking lot, and the camera's doing all the work. You don't have to stop at every car, look at the plate, write it down, file check it. And every day when you go out, you update that with all the latest stolen property, wanted people. It's quite the tool. Drones. We've got 6 drone operators, licensed FAA operators. Those have been incredible. And you put the drones out for lost children, animals. If we're doing a raid, we put a drone up. If we have some sort of a meeting of some kind outside, if we've got a congressman, a senator, or anything that might be a little bit, we're concerned for security, we put a drone up and you've got an aerial view. It's an incredible tool. And we're always finding new ways to use that tool. Poll cameras. We would always ask, the feds would always tell us, we got them. If you need to call us, they were never available. Now we have poll cameras. You can put them up to watch an area that's questionable for drugs. You can put them up where there's traffic accidents all the time. You can put them up for anything. You put them up, and now you've got a record you can watch in real time. You've also got a stored record. Really empowers us to go a lot further. Light towers. Same ones you see at the construction sites. If we've got a crime scene, if we've got people on the road, we can bring them. And we have a light tower van, which has a smaller light tower on top of it, but it's so much easier to move around. And it runs off of the van. It's electric. You don't have to make sure it's filled up with gas, right, and have the noise of the gas generator running to run those lights. Celebrite. We have the tool. The DA, I believe, has it also to break down telephones, to get information out of them when we need. Starlink. We now have Starlink, where if we're in an area without any Wi-Fi and cell phone service, we could now go through Starlink and we have service. We also just went to T-Mobile for some of our phones for the team and some others, because they're linking to Starlink, ATAC. They're gearing up their phones to be very compatible with Starlink. And that's huge for us. Sometimes we have things up in the Beaverkill Valley, up in Lube Beach, yeah, up in Neversink. There's no cell phone service. When we had the forest fires early this year up on Sundown Road, no service. Ulster County brought in a trailer that boosted it, but those things cost a fortune. But with Starlink, we could get by. We could use cell phones, and that would enable us to have computer access and use our phones. So it's all this technology goes a long way. Milo. Milo is a simulator, kind of it's an electronic device. You can play scenarios, and you put your deputies through that, and you change the scenario. So if they already did a scenario, the outcome doesn't necessarily have to be the same. And we run our people through that. They're also able to go in and just practice hand control with the firearm, trigger control, breathing, and up their skills without going to a range with no ammo, and just go what would be the equivalent of shooting hundreds or thousands of rounds safely, quietly, and just building up your skills,
right,
your eye-hand coordination.
And that's a computer simulation screen thing? Or is that?
Yes.
Okay, gotcha.
Yep, it's a screen. And you can put up targets. You can pick whatever system you need off of that. And it's I find it to be very useful. And the people that use it, so not everybody does. Mm-hmm. The ones that do are getting a lot better with their scores. And also, to decelerate and investigate. If you're on something and you get pumped up, it helps you to learn how to bring it down, how to tamp it down, so that maybe it doesn't come to a violent end. But unfortunately, in some of the scenarios, it does. It's geared to. It can go either way. But it's a good way for people to train safely. The Beast, that's in our evidence room, keeps track of all our evidence. It's like what you see at the grocery store, barcodes, mm-hmm. and you just scan it with a handheld device, and it logs it in, logs it out, and keeps track of everything for us. We've gotten a Marine unit. We've got several boats, a jet ski. We're able to go out on Swinging Bridge, White Lake, other lakes when necessary, because on the weekends up here, it's been getting crazy. To avoid somebody being killed, we're stopping people from maybe operating the boat under the influence or towing kids around on flotation devices without them wearing a flotation device, being in a tube or something, or being on a boat with kids not having the proper safety devices. The foot patrols I mentioned, canine program. We got a canine, was working out very well. For the road patrol, we got another one. So now we have two, Country and Doug. The last one was named after Doug Ketchum, a Bethel constable that we lost just recently, and a very well-liked guy, and just a shame. So the dog is named after him, and Country is named after Kyle Muthig, a member that we lost, and his nickname was Big Country. He was a big, burly guy, so the dog's named after him. This year, we came up with a dog for the jail also. Ulster County came down and did a search for us, and we started to realize the value of that for finding contraband and just having it in the jail on visitation day, different things. And that dog's name is Leah, and they're in training right now, Leah and the second dog. Doug is in school, as is Leah in school. Let me see if there's anything over here that I missed. Training. Also in the training, just recently, I think we saw the fruits come to bear. We had somebody on the overpass on Old Liberty Road that was threatening to jump into traffic, and she was waiting for a tractor trailer to come, she had said, and to jump. Our deputies jumped into action. They blocked off Old Liberty Road. State police responded. Monticello PD responded. Fire responded. I was there with the chief, Scott Schulte from public safety. Everybody was there. And our whole crisis negotiation team that we've been training, that they really got a chance to shine. The team showed up. Cheryl Crumley got out there on the bridge with her and talked for quite some time. There were a couple of times she thought she was going to jump. They did an incredible job. There's a photo of Cheryl sitting on the proper side of the guide rail. They're both sitting there exhausted, just chatting and letting the pressure come off. So she got that woman off the bridge. She's alive. She's doing fine. She got the help she needed. She was in crisis, but that's where these trainings and teams come in. Just like our response team, when we have to do a no-knock warrant, they're trained to work as a team. These things can go very bad in a split second. And it's all the training we get, the equipment we get for these people to do those jobs that makes all the difference. So if reelected, I'm going to continue looking at technology, looking at equipment, whether it be cameras. There's talk about going to 9 millimeters. We're looking at that.